All right, this is Centaur Views. My name is No Sense.
And this is Victoria.
This is a podcast where two Sagittarius people come together and give their opinionated views on cultural topics.
Disclaimer, you will be offended. Don't at me.
Yo.
So yeah, we back. It's Centaur Views. This is No Sense.
And you girl, Victoria to God.
Remember to like us and subscribe and share. We're on Spotify, Anchor, Apple Music, Stitcher.
Facebook. Pretty much. Yeah,
we're on Facebook and Instagram at Centaur Views. So if you want to hit us up, continue the conversation, ask us about some additional stuff on the show, you can go ahead and do that. So what are we going to talk about today?
Since it's only right, because it's February, we should talk about Black History Month.
Okay. Before we get into that, do you have any 2 cents for this show?
First, yes. I do have 2 cents. I have one. I would like to say thank you guys for being patient with us. This year, we're trying something different, and we envision to have episodes twice a month versus 4 shows a month, because life gets away with us. But we do appreciate your patience. I want to say that your girl had the vid 2 weeks ago, so we had to put our show on pause. But I'm glad I'm healthy and well. You can see I'm very bright and vibrant, so I'm great now. I just want to say, take your vitamins. Don't put your mouth on people. And
you got it.
That's a whole nother story and a whole nother podcast how I got it. But yeah, just keep your mouth to yourselves and wear your mask, people. Wear your mask. But as far as my 2 cents go, I wanted to talk about Judas and the Black Messiah. Did you watch that yet? You didn't get a chance to watch it.
No, because it's on HBO Max, right?
Yes.
And I've been debating about getting it. I think I'm going to get it this weekend, so I'm probably going to sit down and watch it.
Yes, you do. When you do, please. I'm not going to go into full details, but watching the movie prompt me. It was very timely because we are in Black History Month, and it was timely because it came out right before Valentine's Day. And it's in the midst of all of what was going on, the movie is also a love story. It was a love story between a man and woman. It was a love story between a man and his community. It's a love story between a man and himself and self-preservation. And it was a beautiful movie. It was moving. I was filled with so many emotions, from rage to sadness to joy and pride. To see, when I think about Judas and the Black Messiah, I contrast it between that and Detroit. And Detroit was a story about Black lives, but it was not told in the point of view of Black lives. And that whole movie is disgusting too, in my opinion. The movie was like, it was like some sadistic porn watching them torment those Black boys, because those were children in that movie. But watching Judas and the Black Messiah, it to see it from the point of view of the Black characters, the Black protagonists, it was very prideful, because you got to see the humanity in the people. It was eloquently done, and I was happy to, like, after watching it, I went into full-blown research mode. I went and watched all of I haven't finished all of them, but I watched a lot of the interviews that David Kalua gave, that Lakeith Stanfield gave, that the Lucas brothers gave, and Shaka King, he directed it and co-wrote it also. It was just so much rich information. The family, his Fred Hampton's son and his, I guess, fiance, his son's mother, was very much involved in making the movie. And I remember watching Chirac and how people of Chicago was upset about someone the outsider coming in and making a movie about their city, the fact that they went into and tried to integrate and ask for permission and get their collaboration in the movie, it was beautiful. It was beautiful to watch. It's a lot. It's a lot of history that I did not know. I didn't realize like the Black Panther Party was so pivotal, and in the amount of history that I do have about the Black Panther Party from school, and it doesn't do the organization justice. Like they did so much more than what we learned about. I don't even think I learned anything about the Black Panther Party besides it happened during the Civil Rights time, and it was a program. Like Fred Hammond was a baby. He was 21 years old when they murdered him. And it's scary to see such a young man's life being taken away from him. And the fact that how, and then just we're post all of that with, I think they came around when six, I can't remember the dates, but they were in the 60s. And I'm thinking like my dad was born in the 60s and my dad is not old at all. My mom was born in 56. So I'm thinking about like post all of that and where we are now as a community. And like it's sad. It angers me. It gives me a lot of rage to think about how that one of his, just one life, it's not just his life that affected. It affected a lot of people's lives. It before watching that movie, I had this bias thinking like, why didn't the elders pass down all that information? Like it was so, because I feel like I lived in the 60s in the civil rights era. So I'm so connected to this era. And it's funny that I'm so connected, but I didn't know all of the information, but it's so much. But I judged the elders and was like, why didn't they pass this information down? And I think about it after watching that movie, it had made me face my own biases. It's like that was a 21-year-old boy. Like these were children. Like all the Panthers that are around him in the Chicago chapter were mostly young kids. I don't know if I could have passed down information. I would have went on. There's a lot of people that went underground that fled the country. Like I see why now. A lot of that information wasn't passed down because that's frightening. You think about them murdering Martin Luther King, them murdering Malcolm X, them murdering Fred Hammond. Like that, like all they had to do was just reach out and touch these people, and they obliterated the whole movement. There were huge wins in the legislative portion, like from Martin Luther King stand, and even for the Black Panther, because I didn't know that their programs affected programs countrywide. But it's just it's frightening. It was very frightening, the realization of how this country will go to no ends to make sure that it destroys hope. It's a very enriching movie. It gives you a lot of entry and history and perspective. And if you have the ability to watch it, I would most definitely recommend it. You have to see yourself in that movie. There's so many layers. And I think about Judas and the story of Judas and Jesus and having my own personal Judas and being Judas my damn self. It's just like, it was a lot. I left watching it like, whoa, overwhelmed, but in a good way. So that's just my two cents. If you have not watched Judas and the Black Messiah, you definitely need to, and watch it several times. I've watched it twice already, and I do plan on watching it again this weekend because I didn't want to miss anything. But that's my two cents.
Yeah. Like my mom seen it, and she was like, if you don't get HBO Max, you better come to the house and watch it. Like I said, I'm going to watch it this weekend at some point. But my two cents really is something that I've seen a lot lately coming that coming out of the pandemic. I've seen it before, but just because now as performers, comedians, poets, rappers, whatever, we're learning to be our own promoters now. You know, we're setting up. We don't have to go to a comedy club. We can go to a regular club, ask them, can we have your room for this night and we can promote this club? You book it and everything else. But I see a lot of people booking with their egos. By ego, I mean is I don't want to book anybody better than me. You know, and to me, that's shooting yourself in the foot. One is you can count on yourself. But if you have a crew behind you who you can't count on, when you know that you might not be having a great night, everything might not hit, you automatically giving yourself a bad show. I've always been of the thought that if I'm the worst in my crew, my group, then I don't have to worry.
True.
You know, if somebody's funnier than me, I'm gonna put you on. Because that means that I gotta do less work to make the crowd laugh. They're already laughing, they're already having a good time. When it comes back the next month, if you still only seeing me, but you just keep seeing these, you know, new guys who might be trying something out and I don't really know, but I know that they can't beat me, the audience isn't gonna just come, they're not gonna keep coming back to see me tell the same jokes. You know what I'm saying? And even with poetry, like, it's a lot of cats out there that's really, really good. But they don't want to mess with people like me, like you, just because of the fact that we come in and we do take over.
I see, first of all, I'm going to interject because I don't know nothing about what you're talking about. I don't want no smoke. Like, I have literally.
It's not smoke because the people that we mess with, they don't do that. They don't book out of ego. That's okay, why I've
only done two shows.
I'm saying people that we support and the people that we constantly, they're the people that do that. I'm not going to perform in a show based off of ego. And chances are, I'm not going to be invited to the show if somebody's booking based off ego because of how talented I am. You don't want somebody that might show you up. But the thing is, we're letting ourselves down. We're letting the culture down. We're letting the business down. Because a promoter doesn't, if you have a promoter mind, you want that show to be from top to bottom a hit.
Successful, yeah.
You know, like when I went to Mary J. Blige concert, Joe opened up and Joe can headline the concert by itself. So before Mary came out, you already had a show. It's just she came out and gave you another one. And I feel like when we're at performers, we just need to put that ego aside. And it's a lot of pride. As you know, you got to say, hey, yeah, this dude is on my level. Or he might be above my level. But you got to come to him as a man and have them perform at your shows. So my thing is, while we starting to come back, the world's starting to open back up and we're starting to make this money ourselves, we need to learn to put our ego to the side. Like, stop booking on your ego. Like, book as a promoter.
Okay. That's your two cents?
I'm sorry. After a couple of weeks with shows, you know, you start thinking about stuff.
I can imagine. Glad you got that off your chest.
But we're going to go ahead and get right into it. Like Vic said, we're doing this podcast on Black History Month. But the thing about it is we want to really discuss, like, what is the relevance of Black History Month in 2021? Like, do we still need it? You know, have we come that far enough? We just want to talk about, like, what it is that we celebrate.
How it's been effective, yeah.
Yeah, but I'm going to just, I found, like, some interesting stuff. It's called softschools.com, but it just facts about, like, different holidays. And so I went to Black History Month, and I found, like, some very interesting stuff. The first, it was actually called Negro History Week. That was created to encourage education about America's Black history. And the purpose of it is to remember the important people of African descent and important events in Black history. And so in 1926, it was created by Carter G. Woodson. He's considered the father of Black history. He was the son of former slaves, Eliza and James Woodson, and he earned a master's degree at the University of Chicago and a PhD from Harvard University. And that took place on February 7th, 1926. So by 1929, it had gained nationwide support. And then in 1969, Kent State University Black United Students proposed a month-long celebration, which took place in February 1970. And then in 76, the U.S. government officially recognized it. But it's celebrated in Canada and the United States, and also in Germany and the U.K. in October. So while we do it in February, they do it later in the year. And one other interesting thing is a lot of important events in Black history have occurred around February. So that's why it was chosen, because Frederick Douglass was born, Abraham Lincoln, who played an important role in reshaping Black history, the first African-American woman to win a single.
So I'm glad you phrased that that way.
And then not to mention Barack Obama becoming the first Black United States president happened in January, closer to February. So it's just interesting that we chose that month and things happen still. And matter of fact, the first pro basketball team was organized, the Renaissance, in February. So it's just a lot of history in that. But I want to ask you, though, like, what did you learn about Black history outside of school when it wasn't Black History Month?
When it wasn't Black History Month?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I was like, hold on, when has it never been Black History Month?
March through January.
I get it now. It took me a moment to process that question. What have I learned? Oh my goodness, I love our history. I remember, like I said, my mom was born in 56. So hearing stories like because our people are orators, they're storytellers. The reason why a lot of our history isn't recorded or known is because we tell our stories. We're storytellers instead of writing our stories down. That's something that the Europeans do, we can argue about the effectiveness behind that, but that's not the point. But I remember the stories my mom would tell me about her growing up. And like my grandfather being my mom's mom's father, so my maternal great grandfather, he left Alabama and went to Tennessee because they thought he killed a white man, and they left the state in the middle of the night and relocated. And I remember her telling me about the Ku Klux Klan trying to kidnap my uncles, she was the baby out of six, and the older two were boys. So my uncles, when they were children, they were in the yard, and my great-grandmother, Sarah, that's crazy. I had a grandmother named Sarah, great grandmother named Sarah. But anyway, she had her shotgun and went out and like busting at the KKK, trying to kidnap my uncles. I just remember growing up hearing these stories and like fascinated, even though they were scary and they sound so unreal. It just made me, one, feel prideful. It's like, you know, my family about their business. And then also seeing Black images throughout my household. Like my uncle, the same uncle that was going to be kidnapped as a child, he's an artist. Like all of my family on my mom's side are very are some form of are in some type of art, either whether it's musician or actual sculpting or painting. Like seeing his art, my mom always had his art displayed throughout the house. So just what I learned is to be prideful of who I was, even though I still had to deal with images of self-hate, because my hair, if you've seen me, I just like realized this year that I was light skinned, but because I bruise very easily, but my hair does not say European. My hair is nigga, like, and it's fine. I love it. It's very coarse. And even though I'm getting that imagery, the notion that something was wrong with my hair because of self-hate, I still felt a sense of pride. I loved learning about Martin Luther King, learning about Madam C.J. Walker, because I was an exceptional child, I was surrounded by a lot of white students in a lot of my classes growing up. So hearing about history that pertains to me, where I can see myself, that always enticed me. And I always felt, especially the music in that era, 60s and 70s, like those, the music caused me to want to learn more about it. So it was mostly at home, just seeing those images made me want to know more about our history. And it wasn't until I was an adult, like in learning about, I think, which is crazy, when Mike Brown got murdered, I went through this whole, that's my woke phase. I was like, I don't even like the term woke, but back then I was woke as fuck. We had the internet, so I got to learn more and more and more about our history outside of the United States. And that was eye-opening. Didn't know that we were beyond slaves. My education, I'm thinking about the information that we received throughout K through 12 was not, it didn't do us justice at all. It didn't do us justice, at least me in the Kershaw County School District. They didn't do us justice at all.
Well, no, I want to add something to that point. I've been looking into because you know, the people that were in charge of getting the history books out was a white council. So there's a quote from Julian Hayter, who's a historian at the University of Richmond in Virginia. And he says the curriculum was never designed to be anything other than white supremacist. And it has been very difficult to convince people in other versions that other versions of history are not only worth telling, they're absolutely essential for us as a country to move closer to something that might reflect reconciliation, but even more importantly, the truth. So that's exactly the point that you're making, is the fact that you weren't learning that at school. You were having to learn that stuff outside.
Yeah, and even to the point of calling them, like David, watching Judas and the Black Messiah, David Kalua was like, is his name David Kalua? Like, Daniel. I feel like Daniel. I've been calling him David the whole damn time. And it is Daniel. Thank you for correcting me. But he said that he even reconfiguring your mind to think, not even calling them white supremacists, because they're not supreme over me and you. It's just they're white extremists. So I'm going to practice not calling them white supremacists anymore and referring to them as such and calling them what they are. And they are extremists. There's nothing supreme about whiteness. There's nothing supreme about whiteness at all. Because this is just a social construct that's not even real. It's not real. There's nothing supreme about being white. It's just that they set up the systems to benefit them. And just like I remember a mentor telling us, like the winners write the history.
History is written whoever, by the victors.
Yeah, by the victims. I mean
the victor.
Victor. Victor. Oh, I was saying by the victims. No, that's not what I'm trying to say. Yeah, by the winners. History is written by the winners. So I think to just wrap it up, like I didn't learn much in school, but outside of school is where all my education came from. Being curious and seeing, wanting to know more about my whereabouts, like more about me. And if I know that if I can find somebody else, like learning about the first astronaut, woman, black astronaut, like seeing those images creates another paradigm for me in my mind, because now I know it's possible. And I didn't get a lot of that in school. I had to go seek it. What about you? Did you get, because I know you had a whole different, you grew up in a whole different school district.
Well,
I grew up in
school. My father was very much, he would take me to the library and we would get the Dr. King, I Have a Dream speech on VHS. Yes, we're old, man. And I would have to watch it, this black and white video of the entire speech. I had to read books about Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, books with Langston Hughes. And I was quizzed on this stuff, not by the school, but by my father.
Mm.
And also in my family, my dad is one of, he's the only boy, and the rest are his sisters. They're all teachers. They all were teachers. So they was in that field of teaching us about things that, of course, they weren't being able to teach in the curriculum, but about our history. And one of the biggest things that I learned was I have an ancestor that was part of the Montgomery boycott. Her name is Sarah Mae Fleming. And a year before Rosa Parks didn't get up from her seat, she was in South Carolina and she sat down in what she thought was a black, black writers, but it was actually where a white only section was, because it was the only empty seat. And when she was confronted, the bus driver blocked her from getting off and then hit her in the stomach. And her case never got, she never got to really fight her case, because by the time it went to court, they were already starting the boycotts with Thurgood Marshall. Mm-hmm. Everybody had got into the NAACP. So she was part of the beginning of that. So in my church, because I went to a family church, that was like something that they taught you, like you need to know that your history, like there's somebody who's forgotten, which they actually came out. I think she had like a PBS special on her where, it was kind of like she was the unsung heroes of the movement. But it's just being in a family that was very black. They wore dashikis any given time of the year. So I was always connected and aware of my skin color, how I look, how I look to other people. But it was very much, I say this, you've seen the painting of Jesus, Malcolm, and Martin, right?
Together?
Yeah.
No.
You've never seen that? Yeah, it's like a black, like older black people would have this painting. Like that's who they compare these men to. No. And that's different, I think, coming from a black household. Like it's instilled in us from our ancestors. We had those, the storytellers, who all they did, their only job was to pass the stories down. So we had grandmothers and big mama and all of them, they told us the stories, and we just kept it around. A lot of things that we do is from our ancestry. Even I've read where when you pour the 40 out for your homie, that came from Africa.
Those are libations. Yeah. Those are called libations. A lot of things that we do, we don't even realize what we do. Like, I remember, let's talk about watermelon. When Chadwick Boseman went to go to Africa for Black Panther, he said that. It's like everybody is out there. It was an elder woman out there giving a watermelon to all the men that was going up this mountain. And he mentions, like, yo, in our country, we get picked on for liking watermelon. She was like, why? It's like, this is a fruit that God gave the earth so we can hydrate ourselves. This is one of the most hydrating fruits there are. Like, why are y'all embarrassed about something that your people do? And you pouring out libations for your dead homies. You do the same thing for, yeah, learning that African spirituality has changed my whole life. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, like, that's, I think it's being from a Black family, especially when, you know, you're not, like, you know, both of us, we didn't have interracial parents. So when you come from a house where both parents are Black, it's kind of instilled in us that it has to be taught outside of school. You know, it doesn't stop in February.
Right.
So speaking of that, like, when it comes to Black History Month, like, what did you like or not like about Black History, like, in school and, like, now as we're growing up in the workplace and also, like, in society as a whole? Because a lot of corporations are, like, every February doing something crazy.
Well, as far as, like, currently, like, my job in my area, they don't even acknowledge anything. And I remember they don't acknowledge anything but Christmas and Thanksgiving, which sucks because I don't really participate. I don't participate in Christmas. I participate in eating on Thanksgiving, but yeah.
But you know what contradicts me about that? Is they won't say nothing, yeah, but they always put up something for Valentine's Day. You notice that?
Yeah. Not my area. My area doesn't do anything.
Every area I've been with, they've done something. And I'm like, I was like, y'all hanging hearts, but y'all ain't hanging Black people, you know what, never mind. But it was just like, they just dismissed the whole month.
I like the fact that I used to make the white people uncomfortable by saying happy Black History Month to them. Like, that's a thing. I was like, y'all tell me Merry Christmas, even though I don't celebrate Christmas. So happy Black History Month. As far as school, though, I like the fact that we got to learn. We took a break on learning about fucking Columbus and this raggedy ass country and state, and it just for a moment, can we learn about something? I love Black History Month growing up. I did the most, like, my projects every year was like, I felt like I did the most. It was very creative. It was outside of the box. It wasn't just the whole poster board and a report. Like, I had to
dress up as create something.
I think I dressed up as Madam C.J. Walker one year, and I brought my mom's heart, like, our family heirloom, our heart comb, because she made the heart comb, invented the heart comb, and I think I did that once.
Booker T. Washington.
Seeing Madam C.J. Walker and Martin Luther was like my go-to people. Like, and the fact that I don't like the fact that they emphasized, gave us all information about Martin. I understand the strategy behind it, but I didn't know anything other than Martin. Like, I remember telling my dad, I was like, no, I've never experienced racism, even though I had, like, the racism and microaggressions that I experienced throughout my childhood, it did not dawn on me until way after being an adult. I come from a city that's one of the eldest cities in the state of South Carolina. So of course racism is seized through the city. And so for me, I like the fact that we had the Black History Month because I could see myself in the history lessons, and history was always my favorite subject anyway, history and English. But what I did not like is the fact that we only got the cookie cutter information about Martin, didn't go into any of the information about him being reluctant in the end, that his efforts were not as effective as he had hoped. I didn't learn any of that. But again, what do I expect? Because that's the strategy. You keep them dumb and ill-informed about who they are, then we become their workers so they can keep their billions of dollars to themselves. But,
and that's what that was my thing is. I like that, you know, we did have that month where the history looked like us, but also it was the same thing. It wasn't like you learned something new about, you didn't learn a new person. It was the same people, Malcolm, Martin. It was just like, rinse, repeat, and recycle. Like, it was just the same thing. It wasn't even, you never even thought about like new people who were making history.
We didn't know anything about James Baldwin. Why didn't we read any of his work? Toni Morrison, we did get Maya Angelou here and there, but like, and that's later, like in high school when I got Maya.
But that was like regular English, though.
Yes, like
which tells you how great of a writer she was, but.
Yes.
But I think the only thing that was different is like reading the Roll of Thunder, Hear My Cry. Like that, I remember that being like my ninth grade thing. But other than that, it was pretty much like the same curriculum. Like, I'm advanced, teach me more, but we weren't learning more about it.
Nah, not at all. I wish that there was, like, in our high school, that there was a Black African history class, or because I know it was state of South Carolina, you got to have three or four histories, I believe, just to graduate. Like, why couldn't an option have been African history? Like, I didn't know, even when my kid was in last year, when he was in sixth grade, they were learning about Egypt in sixth grade, and I was like, yo, I wish I had the opportunity. And we might have been, I don't recall learning in the depth of Egypt and their history or ancient Kemet. Like, I don't recall learning all of that in school. And the fact that my son, even though he had a white teacher but it was a different school district also, but I'm glad he had the opportunity and the other kids in the classroom had the opportunity, because I don't recall, like, I vaguely remember Othello and English, vaguely, but I don't remember.
So what about, like, when you see companies, when they, it's Black History Month, so we're going to do this. And then when Pride Month comes, they put on their LGBT hat. You think?
Oh, God. I mean, it's fair. If I got to deal with Christmas, I feel like it's fair game. If Christmas is going to get shoved down my throat, I think it's fair game. Really. I don't celebrate Christmas. Haven't for a few years now.
I feel so.
I get the whole Christmas spirit and everything, but
I feel like if you're going to celebrate that as a company, when you have, you know, stockholders and stuff that's, of course, are putting money into you, I think you have to have representation inside the company as well in order for it to seem true. Genuine, you know.
True. I agree. I think that your company should reflect your values. And if you value diversity and cultural differences in your company, then it should definitely reflect that in your procedures and your celebrations. If your company doesn't, then I'm not one of those people that thinks that everybody should celebrate everything, because that's just like, if for Chick-fil-A to not support the LGBT community, that's fine. And if you feel a way, then you don't have to support the business. Like, there's other businesses. Chick-fil-A chicken sandwich is not the best chicken sandwich. Like, it's cool. I think Popeyes has a better chicken sandwich. That's just my opinion. It's cool. We're living in a time where you have a plethora of options. So use your options instead of getting upset. If that company decides not to support Black History Month, that's just a notification to me. And if they don't support any, like if they don't go and do whole, I don't really give a damn. I don't like, but never mind. I was going to say, they shouldn't celebrate Christmas, but no, I don't give a damn. I want to put my money into places where I want to put my money in. That's just me. Whether you support Black people or Black History Month, that's your business. If I want your product, I'm going to use it. But if I don't want to support you, then that's my right also.
And I feel like, especially like, don't judge me, but I've been watching NASCAR lately. And remember last year, it was a big thing about, you know, the Confederate flag and bringing diversity to the sport. Well, they put their money where their mouth is. Pitbull has a team. And Michael Jordan this year has a team, which includes Bubba Wallace, who was, you know, of course, the Black race car NASCAR driver that was on the forefront of everything. But they're putting their money where their mouth is. They're showing you that they're doing it. You know, it's not just a bunch of white boys making the money. They're allowing us to come in and have that money. So if you're going to celebrate it, that's how you should be doing it. Your business should reflect that as well.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so let's play devil's advocate for a second.
Mm-hmm.
Why can't we have a White History Month?
They have all the other months. they can have whatever they want to have. I'm at the point now, like I see people, I saw a post yesterday before I deactivated my Facebook, and it was a parent that was upset because the teacher asked that same question of this young Black boy. He had a t-shirt on that says Black King. I think it's like Black King. I think that's what it said. And the teacher felt the need to ask the student. Now, this is where I think she was wrong. You don't ask no child this. If you have an issue, you should have contacted their parents, or leave that up for your Facebook group, whatever. But she asked the child this, why can't they have a White History Month? And the parent went on this huge rant about why the child should be able to wear the shirt and be prideful. And then after the whole, I read the entire rant. And had this been a few years ago, I would have like aligned with what she was saying. Now that I've started to homeschool my children, like fully homeschool my children, I'm in the point, I'm aligning with Malcolm X's viewpoints on children and the teaching. Why would you let your enemy teach your children? And if anything, the COVID has taught us that you have the choice. You have the choice. Everybody had to go home. Everybody's child had to come home at one point. You had to make arrangements for your children to be home. So in my mind, when all of that prompted, like when we did this last year and last semester, I was like, I'm not about to be able to do, I can't do this their way. initially I knew for a fact I couldn't be able to do this their way. So in order for me to be able to, and my children to be able to learn, I have to do it my way. Whether they learn everything that the Caucasian or the standard school district says they need to learn, as long as they, for me, as long as their subject matters is still the same, English, math, science, history, all that good stuff. What the context of what they learn, that's what I get to choose. And I just think that if they want to have a White History Month, that's fine. But you as the parent or you as a citizen of the United States have to decide what it is that you're going to do about it. Like, are you going to subject yourself and your children, if you want to subject your children to learn this White History, because that's what they've been doing. like y'all got it. Y'all been having the White History. All history that I've learned was White History. Not all the history. All the history that I've learned in school was mostly White History. I don't recall having Mexican History Month or like Chinese history. Although I would love to learn these things. I think each culture should have their own month if they so choose. I don't think it's necessary, but y'all go ahead with your prerogative. And I think we have to take agency and autonomy of our own lives to decide what we're going to ingest. Like, I'm a big believer. If you don't like what you're viewing, go find something else. You don't like your school teaching Black history, well, go find a daggone school and you create your own school and y'all teach y'all White history over there. But don't, like, the equity in it. Like, I don't care about the equality. Y'all, I don't necessarily need that. For me personally, I want the equity. So I don't have a problem with White History Month. I don't think it's necessary. That's not my concern. White history is not really my concern at all. I don't really think about it because it's always been there, you know? I don't. I know you have a different viewpoint.
Well, no, I think.
Or do you?
This is my thing. Besides the fact that it's something we always learn every other month, but it's what you said. You said culture. Being Black is, we have a culture. When we said earlier in the show, things that we do now come from Africa. A lot of being Black are still traditionally things that came from Africa. You mentioned Chinese people. What they do is traditions that they brought over. Even though they're living in America, they're still doing these traditions. White doesn't necessarily mean culture, because there's so many cultures that have white in them. So if we're going to do that, then you have to celebrate the culture. White people they come from Europe, but they don't eat the same foods that Europeans eat now. They don't do the same thing. That's what I'm saying. Culture. America doesn't have a culture yet.
I think so. I think them rednecks got a culture.
That's a new culture. It's not something that was generational like that. Their culture is still in just beginning. You got a Midwest twang or a Southern twang, or you sound like you're from New York. You're just now developing the culture. It's not as historic as the culture that were brought over here. So I think that's the thing, is it can't be just the white history. It has to be the actual culture. And until they embrace what they were before instead of what it is Americanized, it's not going to be the same.
Yeah, I don't think that they know. They I think they do need white history because they don't know their history. Like, they don't, like, they don't know their own
history. History is biased.
They don't understand. They don't, the history that we've been given from the American education system sucks ass. Like, it sucks ass. So I think if done correctly, and the actual truth, even with you think about Abraham Lincoln's story, if they knew that Abraham Lincoln did not free the slaves because he wanted to. It was just a means to an end so he can win. And that has nothing to do with, let me allow these people to be human. Like, there's nothing, the notion beforehand is like, he felt like he wanted to free the slaves. Oh, he freed the slaves. Why though?
You know what I'm saying? It's so biased.
Yeah, I feel like they need history. They need their own history, their real history, not the bubblegum shit that Americans been pushing the whole time. They know. Y'all need real history.
Like, look at the Vietnam War. If you look in our books, we won. If you look in Vietnam schools, they won. Like, somebody's wrong.
Somebody's wrong.
But,
why are we going in Afghanistan? Like, y'all, if y'all really thought it was about 9/11, like, let's be, like, if we're going to give the history, you're going to get the history. Like, if y'all gonna be that narcissistic, like, at least, at the very least, get the right information. Like, get out of here.
So, since they can't have one, do we still need Black History Month? Is it still necessary in 2021?
I think everything needs a whole overhaul. I think Beyonce's PR team need to get on Black History Month and revamp it, because I think it's necessary. I also think that other cultures need their own months also. Like, it would be nice to learn about your neighbor. Like, we live in the melting pot of the world. Why is it that we? Well, I do know why. That's a redundant question and a rhetorical question. But why is it that we're only learning about one type of people? Like, I would love to learn about Venezuela, people from Venezuela and their history. I would love to learn about Japanese history outside of Hiroshima, how we fucking blew their damn spot up. Like, I would love to learn about other cultures. By these people, I think it's still necessary.
Do you even know that we do have a Latin Heritage Month?
Actually, I do know that. I don't know when. Is it March?
It's like the middle of. It's not even like actual month. It's like from the middle of September to October. It's just a 30-day period.
Oh, okay. Well, that's wonderful.
But, like, we don't even know this stuff. Like,
you're right. I did not know that. I knew that there was one. I didn't know when.
But I feel like it's needed. Simply because, like you said, we don't learn about it throughout the year. So we definitely need it, but we do need to be doing more with it. I think in the past year or so, our newer Black leaders are coming to the forefront. So we may be starting to see that change in February. It's coming, you know, in the future. And I can only hope for that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I definitely still think that until it's become a part of American education, we still need it. Because if you're not celebrating us every day, at least give us some days we can be celebrating.
Now, what I don't agree with is these schools that are opting out of Black History, giving the students and their parents option to opt out of Black History Month.
Because
if we can't opt out of white history, what the fuck you mean? So can I opt out learning about Christopher Columbus? Can I? I remember my son coming, it's like second grade was like, Mom, how did Christopher Columbus discover America when it was people already here? I looked at that child and was like, thank you.
You do know that
they,
there was
the fuck you.
A big to do about Muslim studies. They couldn't study Muslim religion after 9/11. People were taking their kids. Like, you don't want to know who your enemies are? If that's what you're thinking that they are, you don't even know why they're doing it, why they feel like they're, you know, they're
right.
justified in their actions.
Right. Which they were. Because the way America likes to slang its big dick around this world, this little dick, I should say. It ain't big. Because we're dumb.
All right, so we're going to get to the end of this. Since we said we obviously both agree that it's still needed. Do you think we'll ever get to a time where it's not needed?
Not in my lifetime. I have to come in. I have to reckon with that. I think that we have no choice because of the cosmic energy that's surrounding us. We have no choice but to change. I don't know if we will come at a change as fast as we possibly need to. But I think I think that it will happen. I think that in order for us to survive and to be the empire that we proclaim that we are, we have to integrate. Like the country has to do a whole overhaul. I don't think in my lifetime I'll see that, but anything's possible. You see, 2020 just came in and wrecking what I ask is anything's possible.
I think it is, like you said, I don't feel like it's going to happen in my lifetime. I feel like eventually, but in order to get there, we need people like Obama and Kamala to not be representative of one race. Like that doesn't have, it can't be to where they're only on the limelight because they're black. Like it has to be normal. And until we get to that, yeah, I don't think we're going to be able to be without a Black history.
We'll see or not.
We'll be watching from somewhere.
Yeah, ancestors, y'all make sure y'all pour me some whiskey. The next generation, pour me some whiskey. I'll come back and watch the shit show of America.
Oh, well, let me get down my Latin brothers as well. Just pour me some tequila. I've been on that lately.
City going crazy. Top five, no debating. Top five.
All right, so we're our top five this show. We wanted to keep in line with the Black history, but we also want to do something different. Like we said, we always learn about the same people. So we wanted to kind of spotlight some people that are currently making Black history. So we both got our own lists of top five. I don't have mine in particular order. Do you?
I mean, I can. Okay. No, okay. They're not. They're never in any order. Okay, so my top five. These are. I wanted to pick people that were actually that were making history now. Like they're living history makers, and the thing that influenced my life the most is always entertainment. And as much as I love politics, as much as I love activism, entertainment influences my life the most. And I'm not the type of person that puts entertainers on this pedestal. Like I idolize these people. What I do, I see these people as people, and I hate when people are like, well, this whole fantasy of being billionaires one day. Like I understand Fred Hammond in the movie, I'm gonna wrap it up. Fred Hammond in the movie made a great point about capitalism. He said that you don't fight capitalism with black capitalism. You fight capitalism with socialism, with black socialism. And as much as I agree with that statement, because I posted earlier this week about like what us imagining our life, how our life would be if our basic needs were met, like housing, food, shelter, childcare, healthcare, education. If all of that was free, what would your life be like? And essentially that is what I took away from the Black, the Judas and the Black Messiah movie is as the Black Panther Party providing their basic needs of the Black community because the government would not do so. And the potential you can act that can come out of that. So even though these people that I'm highlighting are very much capitalist, I feel that it still doesn't take away from them being an inspiration. The game that we are playing in this country is capitalism. As much as we don't want to play the game, that's the game that that's the hand that we're dealt. So these people, like my first person is Beyonce, of course. Of course it's Beyonce. These people, I feel like they're with the hand that they were dealt, they did the best, they're playing the best that they can. And it's not because they are smarter than anybody else. It's not the opportunities. And I'm just thinking about the ingenuity her parents set up for her and her sister. Like, it look what it did. Like, look what it did for both of their children. Beyonce using her platform to educate. Like, the Black is King album, movie, the contribution she did, like I don't even think I'm finished the dissect portion of it on Spotify. Spotify has this, it goes piece by piece through the entire movie and it breaks it down, gives the history behind it. It like really breaks down the entire movie. And they, at the end, they spoke to the director of the movie. So Beyonce for me is history in the making. Like, I can't even describe the magnitude that she, the reach she will reach beyond, beyond her lifetime. Like her and Jay-Z. Jay-Z just recently did a deal with I forget the name of the company, but they made Hennessy and Moet. He did a deal where he sold 50% of the company to them. He bought it back in, I think, 2016 or 2014 for like $36 million and sold it, half of the company, to them to like $286 million maybe, and still retains 50% of the company. This is all happening from a boy that grew up in Marcy that sold drugs. Like, I get the whole socialism thing, but that's still very relatable. Like, I know drug dealers right now, and if they were on their grind, and they can possibly be not even the next Jay-Z, but they can be on their way to provide for their family the way that both of them do. That's my like one and two. So number three is Charlamagne tha God. From coming from South Carolina and seeing him fail multiple times, like fail tremendously, and then right now he's creating a platform where he is in partnership with another leading company to give opportunities to people that are in the game. Like, one of the people that they just announced that on his Black Effect network, that's on my list. They're on my list right now. As far as his advocacy for mental health, having a Black man be that advocate, be an advocate for other Black men and getting therapy and trying to normalize the conversation around our mental health in our community, that for me speaks volumes, because our community doesn't feel the need to, well, they're afraid. They're afraid of venturing out and learning more about mental health and actually making themselves aware of the mentality and the setbacks that we have in our mental state because of all the trauma we've dealt with. So Charlamagne is my number three because of his advocacy with mental health and just being a big homie, like reaching back and making sure the people behind him get a shine. Tamika Mallory is my number four because of her courageous advocacy. Like her in the summer, her speech about we learn violence from you. I have it posted on my Instagram, one of my highlights, because it's so profound, it's so courageous, it's so brave. Even though I know she probably wasn't going for any of that, because most times when a Black woman is speaking, we don't look for any of that. We just doing what's right. And she just doing what she thinks is right. And now being in the position to be a voice for our people, I really like the men that she's surrounded by. Like, they protect her and they advocate for her. She's making history. And out of a tragic situation, that's the crazy part. But I'm not going to harp on that one. My last one is the guys, Rashad, Belial, and Troy Millings. They are the guys that are from the Earn Your Leisure podcast that are actually on Charlamagne's Black Effects Network. These two gentlemen are like on a fast track of being pivotal for our community. They are providing financial literacy at a very affordable rate. I watched their podcast last week when they had Mark Cuban on their podcast. And Mark Cuban was like dropping like jewels for almost a whole 2 hour conversation. Like, these brothers, they ain't even been on their podcast that long. I think Mike and Will said that they've been doing it for 4 years. I think they've been on their podcast for less than 4 years, and they're providing financial education and literacy to people for free. Like, you can literally listen to their podcast on YouTube, Spotify, and they're giving you like real information from a range of different topics. If you want to sell homes, you want to do stock, Bitcoin, mobile home, investing, like any public speaking, investing, like anything that you can think of that can generate money, they have on their podcast. And I think, like I said, that their contribution to our community is a lot, and it's very helpful, because if, like, even though socialism is the dream and that should be what we are working towards in order to create the equity that a lot of us need, in the meantime, we have to still be able to play the game, because people out here hungry and people out here dying and not being able to provide for themselves. So we still need to know the rules and engagement. And I think that in order for you, like you said earlier about learning your enemy, you have to be able to know that what they're doing. Well, so
interesting about those two, are my though, top five. One of them doesn't even come from a background of finance. He was a teacher. And so they got together to be able to teach other people.
Yes.
When they started, they were teaching young men, but that's what they did. They were taking the elements of both sides to create this way of teaching us how to move our money.
Yeah. Rashad is the finance. He has a background in finance, 10 years of finance, and Troy is the actual teacher. And what he found, he said, I remember listening to his story, because he was on the Breakfast Club, and I've watched other podcast, he was like, he wanted to teach health. Like, he wanted to actually teach in front of people. He just wanted to, like, be a coach and everything. And then he realized that his students didn't know, like, when he actually had to sit down and teach, like, the stuff that they were teaching was, like, it didn't help prepare you for adulthood at all. So he got with Rashad, and that's when they did the after school, a 6-week after school program in the summer for the kids, and it was a success. So, like, when the kids start coming about asking about stocks and everything, so they continued it, and then they created the podcast. And now to have Mark Cuban, like, they've really literally been, I think their podcast is like 3 years young, like, it's very young, and to have go for that and having Mark Cuban on there, like, and I don't, Mark Cuban is not like the, I mean, he's still white, and he, like, we shouldn't be like, I hear
from yeah, people, but he
like, oh, we shouldn't be celebrating because these white people, like, yeah, he is. He really is. He helps a lot of the inner city youth and inner city with financial literacy itself. But to have that caliber of somebody on there, like a billionaire on their show, means that they're doing, like, they're on a fast track. They're doing great. And then they're giving quality information. So that's just my, that's
the beginning. You're back at the beginning, so.
Go ahead.
So my top five is, I guess you could say it's top six, because I'm celebrating Serena and Venus together, because when you talk about, like, siblings dominating a sport, it's a lot. Like, nobody really did it. Eli mm-hmm. and Peyton, they both got Super Bowl rings, but Peyton Manning the more celebrated one. Even though Serena's got more individual, they're both at that level. They were number one and number two spots in the world ranking at one point. The only siblings to ever hold them in that in any sport. And so, of course, they face racism being black. They face sexism. We know about the stuff that they face with that. They still came out with, like, so many Grand Slam women's titles. And then they got Olympic gold medals. Like, how decorated of an athlete can you be at that level? You know what I'm saying? And still be doing.
Right. I was thinking about Serena. Serena is the beast. I didn't even know that she, like, when she had her daughter, she had to, like, she had a bunch of blood clots in her leg, and she told the nurse that she didn't feel right, and she told the nurse exactly what she needed to do. She was like, I think I had blood clots, and she literally got out of bed and had to go find, like, doctors for them to treat her. Like, the endurance that lady has, just thinking about as an athlete that has trained her to know her body well enough, and just to be the amount of strength and pain that she had to be in.
Yeah, I mean, like, actually, to me, they're the pioneers of the modern female athlete. You know what I'm saying? It's just the ethic and
yes. coming.
And then they came from Compton. Come on, man. But so I'm gonna still keep right. on. I got one more sports, and you know how much I respect this man, but LeBron. I think what Ali did for boxing, as far mm-hmm. as being the champion of the people, that's what LeBron James is doing. I mean, as much as he's done on the court, like, considering this man's age, you know, he's pretty much going to be able to play with his son when his son comes in the league. But he stays active about the issues that are in the black community because he knows where he came from. He remembers that. He responds with class at any type of thing that comes back at him. He invested so much in his community the way he, you know, he opened up a school in America, something Oprah couldn't do. So, like, to me, even though he might right. he might never get the amount of rings that Jordan has, but just as far as a man, like, he's the greatest athlete to ever play the game.
Wow.
You know, you can get mad if you want to, but
okay,
it's my podcast.
Right, I was like, Jay-Z didn't. I didn't. exemplify anything that Jay-Z's done to the for the community, but the man itself is fucking greatness.
And Ava DuVernay is number three. Like I said, it's no particular order. But just being like, she has honest representation, honest artistry, and she made room for Black Panther because she was trusted for A Wrinkle in Time, which was a huge budget film. And so without her doing that, they wouldn't have trusted them to make Black Panther. They wouldn't gave that amount of money. They wouldn't put that amount of effort into it. And the fact that she handles everything with integrity, it's just, I mean, she's doing it. When they see us, I mean, to me, it's like, she gonna make sure she's seen. You know what I'm saying?
I can't bring myself to watch
it.
It's
disgustingly true. But you gotta give it up to her. And she one of my celebrity crushes. Right. But Byron Allen is number four. I had to put a comedian out there. And you wouldn't think of him as a top grossing comedian, but he acquired the Weather Channel in 2018. So this man is a self-made billionaire basically off of that. So he went from open mics to being a producer to a mogul. So not only not being able to get in the room, now he has a seat at the table. You know what I'm saying? So just as Black business, like I give all props to him doing something like that. That's what they say that Bill Cosby was trying to buy NBC. He actually bought a station. So to me, that's epic. Being a comedian and coming from it gives you, you know, it gives you some type of light of what you can do when you think bigger than what you come from. And my last one is Marley Diaz. She is I think she's 14 now, but she's a girl who she actually wrote a book called Marley Gets This Done, and So Can You. And so when she was 11, she told her mom that she was frustrated not seeing protagonists that look like her in her reading books. So she started a campaign called 1,000 Black Girl Books to donate 1,000 books with featured Black girls as the main character. But in only a few months, she reached that goal by reaching 9,000 books. So she's the youngest to make the Forbes list 30 under 30. And she still like is striving for more. Like, I love her. She has this quote where she says, girls can't run the world if they don't see their stories being told. Like, this is somebody young. You know how I feel about the people coming up and giving back. Like, just to watch somebody do that, to take something in their hands to say, I want to change what's being out there, what's being represented, and actually doing something about it. Like, that shows a lot. Not only of her, but the parents that she has. Okay, so we're going to get to the spotlight real quick. This time, it's my, I guess I made a choice to pick the spotlight. We're giving it to a Cancer, this show. So we're veering off a little bit, but it's Butch Reed, who passed in February 2021, February 5th, 2021. So this is really fresh. But he was born Bruce Franklin Reed. He was a professional wrestler and football player. And like I said, he was better known as Butch Reed. He was Butch Hacksaw Reed, the natural Butch Reed. But he was a star in the 70s, late 70s, 80s, 90s. And he was in a team with Ron Simmons, who was the first black world champion at WCW, called Doom. But where he got his main star push was in Mid-South Wrestling, where he actually won what would have been their belt in the territory days. It was NWA. So, of course, somebody like Ric Flair would carry a belt around the country, but each territory had their own champion. So he was pretty much a black champion of his territory, which goes to show that just because WWE was not giving their top belts to black wrestlers, there were other companies around doing that at the time because they saw the money in him. When he attended the University of Central Missouri playing football, and then in 76, he was a rookie free agent with the Kansas City Chiefs, but he was cut before the season started. So when he was working out, somebody saw him, said, "Hey, you know, you got a great look. If you Google a picture of this man, like, you would just see, like, his body is, he was made to wrestle. He just was chiseled." But the reason that I chose to spotlight him is because he was pretty much supposed to be the NWA champion, which was the belt that you would take. But he, being of color at the time, a lot of people, NWA wasn't run by one company like WWE is run by one man. It was different guys at a head, kind of like a mafia. And so what they decided, you know, to do with the majority, everybody went with that. But he took Ric Flair, who was the champion at the time, to the limit and even beat him. But they just never gave him the belt at this time. But even to this day, his last two posts on Instagram before he passed, one was of a black group called The Hurt Business, and he quoted Champs. And it was a picture of the wrestlers are MVP, Shelton Benjamin, Bobby Lashley, and why can't I name?
I have no idea.
Alexander. But they all had belts. The three guys had belts, and MVP is kind of like a manager, so he's kind of sitting in the middle. But MVP didn't even know that, you know, he had did it. He didn't tag them. He just posted showing love. And after he passed, MVP, you know, he went back and saw it, and he was like, "I didn't know that he did it, but I just wish that I could thank him, you know, for showing that love." And then also, there was another young up-and-comer guy who's big. He's a, I guess you call him, like, in the country they say hoss. Like, he just huge. But he told him that he was the next Hacksaw, you know, giving him his moniker. And I saw it and, you know, thanked him. But as, even in his dying days, he was still looking at the new guys after him and giving them their props and wishing them luck. And we live in an era where people don't do that anymore. Hmm. So for him to, because he had COVID amongst other things when he passed. He had two heart attacks between January and February. So he was struggling with life, but he still took the time to look at the product and tell these other black wrestlers to keep doing what you're doing. I see you. And a lot of people don't understand, like, what it means to somebody like that. If Tupac was around right now and he looked at Drake and he said, "I see what you're doing," it will mean so much to him because it's somebody that he looked up to. So that's why I just chose to veer off and go with somebody who wasn't a Sagittarius, just because of the fact that he went down, like, still being able to show love to something, you know, that he can't do, but that he wants to see continue and carry on and get greater and greater.
That's the bomb. Some history for your ass.
So we will see you guys hopefully, 2 weeks? Can't nobody else get COVID. I already had it. You already had it.
Right. Let us pray. To all the gods and the ancestors.
But I hope y'all enjoyed this show.
Thank you for listening. Thank you for following us.
And remember, just stay black, love each other. What else?
Pay taxes.
You got until June 25th this year. Or June 15th this year.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah.
The thing is, it set us back, so we good. We'll see y'all in a couple of weeks, man. Peace.
Peace.
Believe in yourselves. Dream. Try. Do good.
Don't you mean do well?
No, I mean do good. Do good.